Well, thank you very much for inviting me this morning. My name is John Seeler, and like Bob said, I am a candidate for the Nebraska Public Service Commission. I serve on the State Board of Education, but I'm not here to talk about politics. In fact, that was kind of, don't talk about politics, talk about me or us or whatever. And so I just have several things I want to talk briefly about. And if I can find my list, I'm going to talk a little bit. How long am I to talk? About 30 minutes, give or take?
Oh, about 7:25, 7:30.
Okay, about 20. Okay. And I asked Bob to give me a kind of a heads up about 10 minutes before I'm done. I would like to share my testimony. I'm going to talk a little bit about, is this on? Can you hear me speak? Okay.
That's a recorder.
Oh, okay. Okay. I thought, I'll try to use my loud voice or projecting voice. I'll talk about servant leadership a little bit. I'll talk about the unborn and the sanctity of life a little bit. Maybe a little bit about what's wrong with education. And then I have a love story to tell you. And then about my hero. And then I would like to share my testimony. Servant leadership is something that we are all involved in. We all think of leaders, you know, you think of the president or the congressman or county officials in a leadership position, but they're also there to serve us. And I'll talk about that here in a little bit, how we are leaders in our own family and with our children, and how we need to serve our wife and our children in addition to being a leader for our wife and our children. A couple numbers I want to share. And one of them is 135. And what 135 is the number of babies that will be aborted while we're meeting here this morning. We have one abortion in the United States every 26 seconds, which works out to about 9 every 4 minutes, which works out to about 135 every hour, about 3,200 every day, and about 1,200,000 every year. In the years since Roe Wade, there's been just over 50 million abortions in the United States. And one of the reasons I put my jacket back on, I had it off, I wear my little foot pin. I don't know, some of you maybe have seen these before. It's a little baby's feet. They represent a baby's, the size of a baby's feet at I think it's approximately age, it's either 6 weeks or 10 weeks, and I should know that for sure. But in other words, when they are just tiny, in early conception, we already have the parts of a baby. And when I talk about abortion, I don't want anybody to feel, you know, with that many abortions, almost all of us know of someone who has had an abortion or is contemplating an abortion. And I'm not trying to make anyone feel guilty, and I'm going to share my story on that also. But it's just a sad fact of life in the United States today is abortion. I have a love story to tell you about Eddie and Ellie. And Ellie was this beautiful girl, about 16 years old. And you know, the blonde and blue eyes and all the curves where they're supposed to be. And Eddie, in today's term, Eddie was a stud. I mean, he was a tall, good-looking Irishman, and he saw Ellie and this cute little Swedish girl, and he said, "Boy, that's the girl for me." And he pursued her in a romance, and of course, as sometimes happens, Ellie became, as they would say, with child. And so Eddie did what so many guys do. He promptly left for Canada. And, I mean, that's just a fact of life. People father a child and then they abandon the mother, or the mother-to-be. And about 3 years later, Ella's brothers said, enough is enough. They went up to Canada, brought him back, and they were married. And this is my grandfather and my grandmother. I'm sorry to be emotional about it. I've practiced this so many times. I wouldn't think that I would get emotional here. I never really heard that whole story until my mother was 92 years old. And she never told it to my face. But my cousins were visiting. My mother was kind of ashamed of that. And my mother was that child that was born. And I think 100 years ago, if that was today, it probably would have been an abortion. Or it very likely could have been an abortion. I would never have been here. My brothers and sisters, my children, my grandchildren. There's over 100 people there that they had the sense not to have an abortion. And I'm sure there were abortions available in 1913, but it was a different method and so forth. But one of the sad things, now this is in a, think of a small town. I don't know if anybody's here from a small town, Platte, South Dakota. About at that time, 1,000, maybe 2,000 people. And so my mother distinctly remembered how hard it was. And being called, her father's name was Beebe, B-E-E-B-E, and she was known as the Beebe Bastard. And to call a child that, how heartless we are. And without thinking. I mean, I don't know that anybody was really thinking of being derogatory when they would say that, but that was certainly the case. And where's the line? We don't want girls to have children out of wedlock. I mean, the Bible is very clear about that. But when a girl does become pregnant, we need to reach out to her and be supportive and offer prayer and maybe financial services, family services. Now, my grandmother lived with her family, like I said, for, I don't know, several years, 3 years approximately, until they were married, and so anyhow, I'm going to share some verses, and most of them are out of Psalms, and probably you know these verses. One of my very favorite verses in the Bible, Psalms 139, 13 through 16, For thou didst form my inward parts. Thou didst weave me in my mother's womb. I will give thanks to thee, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Wonderful are thy works, and my soul knows it very well. My frame was not hidden from me when I was made in secret, and skillfully wrought in the depths of the earth. Thine eyes have seen my unformed substance, and in thy book they were all written. The days that were ordained for me, when as yet there was not one of them. One of the other things that I think of, and I don't know the exact verse, Satan meant it for evil, but God used it for good.
Genesis 50:20.
Say it again.
Genesis 50:20.
Thank you. And I think of that and my grandfather and my grandmother. You know, Satan meant that for evil. But so many good things have came out of that child and that marriage. And you know, I tell that story and I think, boy, my grandfather was a real jerk. And maybe he was. But I want to tell you now a story about my hero, William Beebe. This goes back to the 1880s. And William Beebe's living in Platte, South Dakota with his family. And his wife left him. And she took the kids. And they went to Scotts Bluff, Nebraska. And pretty soon she had an affair and met somebody and decided life would be better in Oregon. So she wrote a letter to William Beebe. my great-grandfather and said, I'm going to Scotts Bluff with my new husband. If you want these brats, come get them. There were three children, two boys and a girl. And my grandfather was one of those children. And so William Beebe got the wagon, this is 1890, went approximately 200 miles, partly through what was then known as Indian Territory. You all heard of the Wounded Knee Massacre. Well, that was, I think, in 1894, if I remember my history. So it was a potentially dangerous journey. But he went and got these children, brought them back to Platte, South Dakota. He then remarried a very godly wife, and they raised these children and did their best. But, you know, when your mother doesn't want you, it's a sad situation. And so I kind of can understand my grandfather, maybe why he turned out like he did. He was an alcoholic all of his life until about 65 or 70, and then he quit drinking. He had five children. They had, I should know the exact number, 25 grandchildren and 125 great-grandchildren and great-great-grandchildren. So there again, good does come. I remember I worked in Platte, South Dakota on a construction job in college. And I stayed at my grandparents. And one day, Mom came over and we went to lunch at the local restaurant. I don't know what it was. And we all had a cheeseburger and a Coke and fries and pie, and it was a whole $3. And my grandfather paid for that. And I scolded my mother afterwards. I said, Grandpa doesn't have hardly any money. Why would you... why would you make him pay for lunch? She said, that's the first thing he has ever bought me. That's the first thing he has ever bought me. You know, how sad. And my mother became an overachiever, and I'm kind of glad. I like to think that I have pretty good grammar, and that's because she would correct me incessantly. It drove me crazy as a kid. Don't say ain't, don't say this, don't say that. But I think that part of that was her way of changing... seeking perfection. Well, anyhow, so that's a love story and my hero. My testimony, I was raised in a Christian family, in a church-going family at least, and to prove it, I have 12 years of perfect Sunday school attendance. We used to get a pin every year so I had a little chain of them. We went to the Methodist Church in our hometown of Spencer, Nebraska. And so I always had a head knowledge of Jesus, but I never really had a heart knowledge until I was about 40 years old. And we had a very successful business, my wife and I, and a great house and a great family. And then we lost that. And we had a business failure, and it's so humbling. But in that time of crisis, my wife came to my side, and she led me to the Lord. She had been a Christian for about 10 years before I had been, and she was very patient. I'm so thankful. You know, so many times when marriages go through financial crisis, there's a divorce. And my wife did not divorce me, and I'm just always thankful of that. That's one of the reasons I got involved in the Right to Life. After I became a Christian, we attend Christ Community Church, and one of the messages the pastor gave one day, it was in January 1987, approximately the 23rd, the third Sunday of the month, a Right to Life message, which is Right to Life Sunday. And he shared the biblical basis for life. In other words, before that, I had always thought, well, you know, my wife believed in pro-life, and I believed in... I never believed in abortion, but I thought, well, that's something that everybody should decide for themselves. But boy, after I heard that message from the pastor, I have always been pro-life since then. And my wife has given me permission to share this story. Before that, we lost a baby. We had, you know, we were young married people. This is about 40 years ago. And then you think, well, about birth control and so forth. And we thought, we didn't really want my wife to be on the pill. And there was this thing called an IUD, an intrauterine device. And it was made by a company named Dalcon Shield. And so my wife went to the doctor, and he recommended this, and we used it. And one day in June of 1973, she got a terrible cramping feeling. And it turned out that she was pregnant. We did not know that. And that the IUD had somehow dislodged and gotten into the unborn baby. And so we didn't know what to do. Of course, you look to your doctor for advice. And he said, well, if that baby's born, it will probably be handicapped, maybe crippled, and it probably will die or miscarry, but you should consider an abortion. And I thought, boy, for me, that was a no-brainer. I said, well, let's have an abortion in the morning. And my wife said, well, she didn't like that idea. And the doctor was very wise, and he said, let's just see what happens. Well, overnight, the Lord took care of that for us. We didn't have any decision to make. She did have a miscarriage. And, you know, that baby's now in heaven. I'm jumping around a little bit, but just to finish, we have four children, Stephen, Christy, Jenny, and Nick. And I had always liked the name David, and I thought, you know, we would name my youngest son, Nick, we would name him David. And then when Nick was born, that just didn't quite seem right. And afterwards, years later, I got to think, that's because we already had a baby named David, a baby boy, who died and went to heaven. And so that's one of the reasons I guess the other thing on that, I never grieved for that baby for 19 years later. When my wife had the miscarriage, I was not a Christian. To me, it really was just tissue. It was not a live being or a potential human being. So when people say they participated in an abortion or had an abortion, I understand that because I've been there myself, and I'm not condemning anybody. To me, it was not a child. It was a fetus. It was just tissue. And so I just would encourage you to support pro-life. I just want to close, you know, the Bible has great benedictions. And I like Ephesians 6, about 20 through 21. And it's, with all prayer and petition, pray at all times in the Spirit. And with this in view, be on the alert with all perseverance and petition for the saints. Pray on my behalf that utterances may be given to me in the opening of my mouth to make known with boldness the mystery of the gospel, and that I may speak boldly as I ought to speak. Peace be to the brethren, and love with faith from God the Father and the Lord Jesus Christ. Grace be with all of those who love our Lord Jesus with a love incorruptible. And thank you for inviting me today, and I hope that it's been helpful.
Compared to other countries in the world, do you know where we stand on that issue, or?
I do not know exactly. I think that in some countries, abortion is still illegal. In some countries, it's just practiced on a which is sad. China is one of the worst. In China, you're only allowed to have one child, although they've changed that recently. But and most people there choose a baby boy if it's a girl. This is the other sad thing. They can be born and then put to death after birth, which is just hard to imagine. This whole abortion business is sad. So I don't really know the answer. Thank you again.
Anybody else got questions?
No.
What was your business, if you know?
Oh, no, we were in the costume jewelry business. And we had 12 stores in Iowa, Nebraska, North Dakota, about 100 employees. And just a combination of things, the market changed, interest rates got up to 22% on business loans, and overexpansion. And one day it was like we were printing money, and the next day you couldn't do anything right. Mm-hmm. You know, and it, I don't know what happened. It's frustrating.
How can you describe a little bit? I know you don't want to talk about politics, but the school issue is a scary piece for parents. I mean, what's that look like in the future? Is that push for removing history as strong as people should?
Yes. The question is on history and what's going on in schools. And before I answer that, I want to give you the background. When I was first elected to the State Board of Education, we went to Washington, D.C. for a national meeting, and my wife went with me at our expense. My expenses were paid, but Becky, we paid for hers. Coming back, she says, well, what did you learn? What happened? What was... And I thought a minute, what did I learn? Well, the six things that I learned were things that never happened. Number one, we never had a presentation of the colors. Number two, we never said the Pledge of Allegiance. Number three, we never sang the Star Spangled Banner. Number four, and this was during the war in Iraq, it was winding down, we never had a moment of silent remembrance for those serving in our military. Number five, even worse, we never had a moment of silent remembrance for those who had given their life on the battlefield. And number six, we never had a prayer or asked a blessing before a meal. And we were assembled for about eight different meals as a whole group. And so when you say, what's wrong with education? These are the members of the State Board of Education from around the nation and the commissioners of education around the nation. And they don't think to honor our country or to honor our servicemen or to have prayer. And to me, that just sums up what's wrong. And then that leads to things like you're talking about on the history guidelines and not teaching that we are a great country, an exceptional nation, not teaching about leaders in our nation. There's just so much that is left out of our history books. Our country, we've made a lot of bad mistakes, and we don't need to cover them up, but we don't need to emphasize them either. We need to emphasize the good things that have happened, the greatness of America and its leaders. I was just rereading a history book this morning, and George Washington, in his, not really his farewell address, which is better known, but his last address to his officers, you've heard of Francine's, well, no, this was not at Francine's Tavern. This was in Annapolis, Maryland. The Congress was meeting, and afterwards, he assembled his officers. And in that, he called on God, and he broke down, got very emotional in giving that speech. And that was, the basis of that comes from a first-hand letter that one of the people in attendance had written. But we never talk about that in our history class. That it was, our nation was founded by people who loved the Lord. Somebody else had a question.
Saying the Pledge of Allegiance, you know. I remember the next year going to school, we couldn't say it because it said one nation under God. So we took it out of the school system.
Yep. That is so sad. Now, just to brag just a little bit, although as Yogi Berra said, if you really done it, it ain't bragging. But I'm glad my mother didn't hear me quote Yogi. But the Pledge of Allegiance was taken out of our schools, and I was part of the effort 2 years ago. We passed a resolution, it's actually a rule, that the Pledge of Allegiance must be spoken in every public school in the state of Nebraska every day. Now, each child constitutionally has a right not to participate, and we acknowledge that. But somebody in that school needs to lead the Pledge of Allegiance, whether it's a student, a teacher, the principal, whether it's over the loudspeaker. Preferably it's in each classroom, which is probably the way you did it. It's the way I did it when I was in school. But you're right, that's one of the very most egregious things, is to take out the Pledge of Allegiance. So,
when was prayer taken out of the schools?
Approximately, I think it's in the 1950s, and I don't remember the Supreme Court case, but it was on the so-called separation of church and state, which is not in the Constitution, but the Anti-Defamation League and the American Civil Liberties Union preach that so much, the separation of church and state, that according to public opinion polls, most people, and I used to think this, thought that those words were in the Constitution, the separation of church and state. That's not true. It talks about the freedom of religion, but that's just a miscarriage of justice to have the prayer taken out of the school. Thank you very much for inviting me and for the questions, and thank you, Wilson.
Thank you.
Yeah.